to the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and in this marvelous team-up, where we're going to go with the STVD classic 2-in-1 lineup here. So with me, the Marvel zombie to my DC dummy, it's Dan. Hey, Dan.
Good. Hey, how's it going?
It's going all right. The rare instance of us recording not just back-to-back podcasts, but also back-to-back within less than... Not even less than 24 hours, less than 12 hours, I think. Well, more than 12 hours. Anyway, we're not here to talk about math or my lack of mathematical skills. We are here to talk about WandaVision, finally. I'm so excited.
Yes.
And obviously, we're going to be talking about WandaVision, you know, so far, because as of this recording, I guess they've aired 6 episodes of the scheduled 9. And, you know, we're cutting this one a little close because we're going to release it, you know, within 24 hours, probably of the 7th episode. But whatever, y'all can listen to it on Thursday. There you go.
Yes.
It's, you know, this is one I will confess there have been a few people who have asked me, are you going to do a WandaVision podcast? And I said, originally I was like, no. And then I was like, And then I think even talking to you and all of a sudden just realizing, oh yeah, Dan's like a big Marvel dude. And you were telling me about, you know, your expansive collection of Avengers comics and stuff. I thought, oh, this is kind of a bit of a twist on the podcast we used to do back in the day when we were covering more DC oriented material. Now we're moving more into your wheelhouse. So I was like, We really do need to do a goddamn podcast about this, but we were just holding up because we wanted to get number 300 recorded first.
Right.
So anyone who has listened to us before, you know, they already know that we're kind of geeks, especially when it comes to like comic book stuff. And they know from certain conversations we've had, we're both, you know, we're both fans of both DC and Marvel. And I think it's fair to say that unlike some, I call them the one-sided, one-note haters out there, I think we tend to call it like it is for both the MCU and the DCEU or whatever the heck DC calls it this week because they keep changing it, whatever. See, and I'm the DC guy and I'm saying that. So with this, let's just lay out the plan really quickly here. We are not going to recap all 6 episodes here. That is not what's going to be happening here. We will go through them a little bit to some extent, but we're really going to more focus on what's happened more recently with the series. You know, it's really talking about what we think certain things might mean, where do we think things are going, and so on. I'm sure we're going to touch on at least a few, some, definitely not all, of all the countless theories that are out there. Might be leaning on Mr. Dan a little more heavily here because I know he thinks they're doing certain things that are relating to certain comic book storylines, so we can talk about that as it comes up. However, I'm aware many of our listeners, they're not comic book readers. You know, some of them haven't even seen the majority of the MCU movies. So we will try not to geekasm too much and, you know, give you too much of an information dump whenever possible.
Well, yeah, some of them are basically, you know, functionally illiterate, like CJ or David Gott. So, I mean, they're definitely not even comic books. It's beyond their grasp. So, we'll try to dumb it down as much as we can.
Yeah. Yes. I laughed so hard one of the posters just flew off my fucking desk. I hope there's something important written on that one. Anyway, so let's get started with the basics here. And by that, I just mean the basic setup of the series and what the eventual follow-through has been here. You know, so again, we're talking about WandaVision. Oh, by the way, because I haven't heard anyone mention this, very clever little title they came up with here. You know, obviously it's the two lead characters' names kind of combined in that cheekily colorful corporate sounding way. But I also love the fact, you know, with the takeoff on things like, you know, Panavision or Vistavision or retro terms like that. Now it's WandaVision. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, and I definitely thought it was like, it seemed to be just like combining the two characters, but it definitely seems like, you know, almost more of like, you know, this is a show that Wanda's putting on, like, you know, the television thing, you know, so I think it works both ways, but it's kind of like feeling more like, yeah, you know, like this is the, you know, her show.
Right, and yeah, because it's a title that works on multiple levels, because yeah, like you just said, it's Wanda's Vision. Yes. Exactly.
Now, yeah, and they're watching it in show.
Right. It's one of those things that the show at first seems deceptively simple, and then you realize, wow, there are almost a shocking number of layers going on, you know, from episode to episode. You know, not just the simple mysteries that we're all trying to figure out and the little Easter eggs they're throwing in. And wait, does that mean something or not? We don't know. But I'm really admiring what they're doing here, probably more than I expected to, even though this was a series I wasn't quite sure what to expect before it finally premiered.
Yeah. And I definitely get the, you know, from what I've seen, like a lot of the people that just have watched the movies are pretty, you know, perplexed as to the direction the show's going, because I'm not sure what exactly they're expecting the show to be like with, like, you know, a character and a dead character and what they're going to be doing. But my parents are definitely pretty confused, even though they're like old enough to, like, you know, like they watched like fucking Bewitched and stuff. So like, right, they should know what's going on somewhat, but you know, well, it's a little bit out there.
Absolutely. But what I, at least from what I've seen and heard from the people I've spoken to, and I am talking about a very wide range of people, from people who are, you know, not just into the Marvel movies, but they even, some of them even know at least comic books to a certain extent, all the way to people who actually haven't seen the movies, much less have read a comic. The majority of them are really into it. Yeah, there have been some that say, oh, it's a little slow or a little this. You know what? You're always going to have those people. Who cares? We're not here to talk about that anyway, you know, because those people, they're not going to be listening to this podcast anyway. So who cares? Anyway, the series, something to point out right off the bat. Obviously, it's very much a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Now, while other Marvel shows, you know, like all of Netflix ones or even Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Agent Carter, you know, they were considered part of the MCU, even if they always felt largely ignored by their big screen brothers and sisters, that is not the case with this project. In fact, the way the Marvel Cinematic Universe has unfolded over the past 13 years, anyone who pays attention to that knows they always talk about it being in phases. You know, this is phase one, this is phase two. WandaVision is actually considered the beginning of phase four. It has been, you know, it's been officially declared that, in fact. You know, they planted the flag there. That's pretty important, you know, at least as far as, you know, the MCU is concerned. I'm assuming everyone knows the MCU is Marvel Cinematic Universe. I can lower my number of syllables here. Now, as you were saying, we are picking up the story of two of those Avengers, Wanda Maximoff, who has yet to ever have her actual codename used in any MCU movie, so I don't know if it even exists technically, you know, because we know her from the comics as the Scarlet Witch, of course, and the Vision, who's a powerful synthezoid, who's the love of her life, and as you pointed out, that's a character we also saw die in the feature film Avengers Infinity War. The setup of the series, hey, look, they're both alive and together, and they're living a suburban existence in this idyllic town of Westview, which feels like it's straight out of an old Nick at Night schedule. And that's pretty literal, since every episode seems to bounce forward in time and seem to be modeled after a different classic sitcom. Also, every episode has also been titled after a very common and usually retro phrase from the history of television, you know, quite often harkening back to whatever show, you know, WandaVision sitcom situated life is taking place. So you get titles like Film Before a Live Studio Audience or Don't Touch That Dial or Now in Color and so on. And finally, with the exception of the We Interrupt This Program episode, as I was saying, every episode in the life of Wanda and Vision is, I would say, framed and inspired by classic sitcoms, while not necessarily being in any way a direct adaptation of them. So you get the nods to everything from theme songs to the actual set decor and any number of very familiar TV tropes that are specific to either that show or that era. So, you know, you might get the old-timey style plot of, my boss is coming to dinner, we better whip up an amazing dinner fast, you know, which is, you know, there's countless old sitcoms that had that plot. Or, you know, you fast forward to, well, kids actually fast-forwarding their actual age. You know, the kids that grow older at a rather alarming rate on sitcoms. Not to mention the unexpected recasting of roles, which is also kind of a familiar sitcom thing. You know, either you're a Dick York or a Dick Sargent. Now, the first two episodes, you know, they took on the feel and style of the Dick Van Dyke Show, then the early season of Bewitched. You know, those really remained almost completely in the sitcom universe, and you had to really look and listen for any of the little oddities and clues to figure out what might be going on. I think that's where maybe there were some portion of the audience was maybe, I don't know if they were losing patience or just getting confused, because they were totally locked out of everything other than that sitcom world in those first two episodes. I personally kind of felt I knew what they were doing, because no, I don't know that, but I kind of had a feel of where they were trying to go, and I was kind of really willing to go along for the ride. What were your feeling when you were watching at least because those first two kind of stand up from what came after, I thought.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty, you know, if I'm liking something, I'm pretty acceptant of the pace that they do. I'm very patient when it comes to stuff. I mean, I can't think of anything that makes me the least bit impatient, like, you know, hurry up and get there. I don't know. I guess I'm just not that kind of, like, you know, impatient fucking child, I guess.
I thought we were going to have a PG podcast. That's true, because I'm thinking about the stuff that you've liked over the years as I've known you. You are someone who will exhibit patience with things where others might not, whether it be the latest thing by David Lynch. You know, Mad Men might have tried some people's patience. You know, the certain types of classic cinema that I know you're into. There may be someone who have shorter attention spans who might not be able to get into it. So I give you, and of course, the show we talked about even last night on the 300th podcast, a show like Rectify, for example. That's true. That's a very admirable quality, because I get really frustrated with people who kind of like lose their patience, or like, I gave up after two episodes. And it's like, no, you gotta give it a little time. You're not going to die tomorrow. You can watch, you know, a few more hours anyway.
Yeah. I understand why people would like, you know, watch, you know, fucking Thor and like Iron Man and then watch this show and just like not understand what's going on for the first couple episodes, because I'm sure they're expecting, you know, like, I don't know, bad guy to do something, and, you know, it not to be like a completely like odd thing with no explanation, sitcom goofy thing, which makes no sense. So I can get that.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, I really don't want the podcast just to be about, you know, either we're understanding or scolding people who have issues with it, because that's not what we want to talk about that much anyway, even though it is kind of fun to pick on people. But yeah, the people behind, you know, the MCU with Kevin Feige and those folks, you know, I've already given them plenty of credit over the years for how they've constructed, you know, the piece by piece, phase by phase, film by film way they've done their movies, which is pretty much unprecedented. And then, you know, then I have to hear people whining about what DC is doing. It's like, oh, no, not everybody's the same. Leave me alone. Shut up. But this was yet to me yet another really big risk for them, because you don't know. And plus, it's not a binge, you know, kind of a show where, you know, they might have realized that, you know, after an hour of watching, but in the next hour, they realized what was going on. They had to wait the old school style, you know, the week to week kind of way. So you take that risk of, oh, that's a week worth of social media and tweeting and all the other stuff. But it has worked to their advantage. It has, even though there might have been some people who kind of got frustrated with it, there were far more and far louder people who got really excited by it, because it kind of tapped into their theorizing, speculating kind of brains. And we all know that there are certain shows over the years that we really get into because of that, because they create that kind of conversation and we start wondering and speculating. We start combing the internet for articles. We start reading research, or maybe we just talk to other friends, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
So back to this specific show, like I was saying, there's too much to try to break down if we were going to go episode by episode, detail by detail. So we're not going to do that. I actually thought a nice, somewhat quicker way to speed things along so we can get to where the story is pretty much now and where they might be going. I took a look at those earlier episodes. All the episodes, not early, just all of them. And I thought, hey, why don't I just do a little quick couple minute breakdown of those, you know, so-called commercials that we've seen in, well, five of the six episodes so far. Obviously, we didn't get one in the, you know, We Interrupt This Program episode. Because those TV spots, those ads, they appear to both both figuratively and literally give us insight into both the mind of Wanda. You know, these are like the touchstone events that may have led her here. They may very well be the benchmarks that have scarred her, like her psyche and her soul. It all depends how you read them. And the more I think about the commercials, the more I'm intrigued by them because of how they're being used and realizing that she, or supposedly she, is behind this as well. Although this is something that only the people on the outside can really see, because we're not aware of anyone that's within Westview is experiencing them. Although maybe they are. We don't actually know that. But to get to the commercials, you get the first spot. That was the one that was for that odd toaster by Stark Industries. And I remember when I saw that I caught on to what was happening right off the bat with that one, because there was that weird beeping, which sounded like a ticking bomb kind of thing. And then even though everything's in black and white in that episode, pretty much, there's a quick little odd flash of red that happens. Pretty much you can look at that as that Stark Industries toaster kind of represents a bomb, i.e. the bomb that was one of the bombs that was dropped on Wanda's native country of Sokovia, which killed her parents. So you can look at that as, you know, like the first scarring major bad event in her life, in a life that's had a number of tragic events. The next spot was for that Strucker watch. Ah, Strucker. and a watch that also featured a Hydra logo on its face. If you don't know anything about Marvel movies and shows, you know, Hydra is the evil organization that's always opposed to S.H.I.E.L.D. And Strucker, well, that's Baron Von Strucker, you know, who actually worked for Hydra. He was in charge of doing these forms of experimentation that really led to what happened to both Wanda and her brother Pietro. The fact that also you can even say the fact that the ad is for a watch, you know, means it's about time. And maybe what we're seeing with these sitcoms is also a certain form of manipulation of time as well. But it's really more about, I think, the this is when she gets her, the experiments start happening with her. The third commercial, that was for the Hydra Soak bath soap. And initially I thought, oh, that's interesting. They're doing Hydra references back-to-back spots. Okay. But this kind of feels like they're referencing Wanda actually getting her abilities, because they use phrases throughout the ad like, you know, you read my mind, or escape to a world all your own where your problems just float away. So it's not really even just talking about her abilities. It may really be a deliberate hint or red herring, but I'm going to go with hint about what's going on in this series as a whole. However, before I move on to the next spot, I would be remiss if I didn't mention something very few people might have realized or remembered. It's something that actually happened in a different Marvel TV show a few years ago. It was in an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. There was an episode, I think it was in the fourth season, which is I really like the second half of that season. Agent Coulson, he's the guy who died on the big screen but came back to life on the small screen, but they never talk about it on the big screen. He actually talks in one episode about a Hydra mind control soap that, and I quote him here, seeps into your bloodstream and plants false memories into your brains. Huh. Now, that could just be a cute little wink and a nod, but kind of an interesting coincidence, and I can't imagine it is, but I'm just giving you that little breakdown nonetheless. And I apologize. I know I'm doing a lot of the talking here, but I'm just trying to run through these. Then, you know, Dan will take over. Don't worry. Fourth spot. That's the one that's in the 80s episode, which is the very family ties themed episode, you know, on a very special episode. The fourth TV ad was for paper towels, but it was for Lagos paper towels, to be precise. So you get phrases in the spot like, you got a mess to clean up. And I think it ends with a tagline, Lagos, for when you make a mess that you didn't mean to. Again, this is, we're dipping back into the MCU movies here and her history and things that go horribly wrong in Wanda's life. This is referencing the event that happened. It was in Captain America Civil War, where I think early on in the movie, there's a handful of Avengers. I know Captain America is one of them. I think Black Widow is there too. They're trying to capture this weapons dealer, but they're in Lagos, Nigeria. However, the dealer, he ends up setting off like the suicide bomb, but Wanda, yeah, she tries to contain it in one of the...
Yeah, it's like the former Hydra agent, Brock Rumlow, Crossbones. Yeah,
Crossbones. That's who it is. I should have remembered that.
I just rewatched all the movies except that the two Spider-Man ones aren't streaming on anything I got. So I just watched like all of them and finished Endgame up today. So this shit's really fucking fresh.
Oh my lord! Excellent. So as you just saw, she basically puts one of those glowing spheres of energies and contains the suicide bomb, but she flings the glowing ball, up into the air, but she flings it right into a building filled with innocent people. That incident and the resulting, death toll, that's what leads to the Sokovia Accords, which is basically, legislation that requires all superpowered individuals to register with the government, reveal their identities, and so on. And then that ends up becoming the main issue of contention between the Avengers like Iron Man and Captain America, and resulting in that big battle royale that happens later in that film, which is so cool. It basically, all this happens because Wanda has really bad aim.
Yeah, it's, I just rewatched that, and it's just kind of interesting because, like, in the comics and, like, on the movie, you kind of naturally side with Captain America, mm-hmm. but by doing so, you're actually kind of, like, against, like, gun registration and, like, pro, like, Second Amendment, basically, because that's kind of, like, what the story is telling. So it's a little, like, odd to think about it like that because it's, like, totally not how I roll in reality, but, like, Captain America's just too cool and, like, he's right. And Iron Man's kind of being a dick, but he's also being right. So
that I hadn't thought about as being analogous to the Second Amendment. That's interesting. But yeah, because they often, that's a thing you hear in comic books and movies of dealing with this genre all the time, where they look at, these superpowered individuals, whatever they call them. Sometimes they're metahuman, sometimes they're superpowers, whatever, supers, whatever. They refer to them being used as weapons. So yeah, it's weapon registration. I hadn't really thought of that. Interesting.
Yeah. Of course, in the comics, the event that starts out the Civil War is like a superhero fight that happens near a school and like a bunch of kids get killed. But of course, they have to change it up for the movies because half of America doesn't give a fuck about a bunch of kids getting killed, so they had to make something they would actually be able to identify with. Okay. Well, let's be honest.
Okay. All right. Much like WandaVision, we took a turn I wasn't expecting, that's all. All right, and then speaking of something taking a turn I wasn't expecting, let's get to the final, and I would say the way, way creepiest, did that really just happen? TV spot, which appeared in last week's episode, the all-new Halloween Spooktacular episode, which was modeled largely after the Malcolm in the Middle. That one obviously takes place at Halloween in a world... well, that's what I just said, actually. The spot is where I'm talking about, and the spot is for something called Yo Magic Yogurt. And the spot features this little boy on a tiny desert island. He's so mournful. He's so hungry. He'll eat anything. Then this little claymation shark kind of hops up on the island shore and gives the little dude a container of Yo Magic Yogurt, before he goes and swims away. The problem is the kid, he's so weak, he can't peel back the lid. And then he dies, becoming a skeleton. And we're hit with the tagline on the ad, Yo Magic, the snack for survivors, which is... Wow. So, okay. There's so much to look at with this little tiny little ad here. I mean, obviously you get your top layer of, it's a TV spot actually featuring death, which therefore could correlate to the death Wanda has been grieving over, such as her brother Pietro, as well as the Vision. Yo Magic doesn't save the day because it's too late, because the kid is unable to open it, much the way it's too late for Wanda to have saved either her brother or Vision with her magic. Over the past few episodes, Wanda has seen brief flashes of first Vision, in that decaying corpse-like mode. And in this episode, she briefly sees her brother in the same way with all the gunshot wounds on him, So she's seen them both kind of in that corpse-like manner, much like the kid on that tiny beach. But there's something else that we can't really walk away. We can't walk away from that edge just yet, because you got to say something about that shark, because his manner of speech, his color scheme, everything just seems a whole lot like Pietro does in this episode. But we're going to get into that a little bit later. Not much later. It's going to be a quicker podcast than normal, believe me. But we're going to, I believe that's going to be the centerpiece of this podcast once we get there, I think. I really liked these weird little ads because I just felt they were giving us backstory and they're also giving us kind of hints about the current story. And with this last one, it's kind of giving us little hints about where the story might be going. So even though every episode has been, 20 something minutes, 25, who knows, because the credits go on forever, what the actual running times are sometimes. But that's why I thought it'd be just easy just to go over the commercials, because it kind of tells us where we've been, where we are, and where we're going, At least that's the way I took them.
Yeah, totally. When you watch the show, what kind of frame of mind do you have? Because I'm guessing you haven't really read most of the comics that are kind of maybe being used here. So when I watch the show, it started out as kind of funny, and then when she gets pregnant, the show becomes more tense for me, because I know there are consequences for that, mm-hmm. at least in what I've read. So then it becomes almost more of not like a horror show, but I'm watching maybe a Black Mirror episode instead of a goofy fun thing, and then it just becomes more and more tense for me. What kind of experience do you have watching it?
Well, I don't have the experience of having the comic book background that you do, so. But for whatever reason, not just recently, but just over the years, the way sometimes I've talked about how somehow I can occasionally talk about a TV show that I've never actually seen, but somehow through osmosis of some kind in the ether, I just seem to know a lot of things about it, just because you just pick up on things. Maybe it was referred to in a million articles over the years and stuff like that. I kind of feel that way a lot with a lot of the Marvel comic book storylines, because for me personally, I was an avid reader of Marvel when I was a kid, so I read a lot of Marvel stuff in the 70s into the 80s. But I probably kind of weaned off a lot of the Marvel stuff, I would say by the early 80s, probably before we even got to Secret Wars, Secret Invasion, all those huge event things that happened in Marvel Comics. That might have even been economics at the time. I might have been okay, I can't buy 30 something comics every month because I can only steal so much money out of my mother's purse or whatever, however I was getting money at the time. So I had to whittle it down. And from that point on, I would get the occasional Marvel comic, or maybe some new title would intrigue me and I would buy that. Sometimes it would be something really good. Sometimes it'd be oh God, I fell for the stupid X-Men crap that they pushed out there in the early 90s, because we all thought it was going to be worth $1 billion, but then they sold 1 billion copies. So it's worth nothing. But I would just find out just through that. And also I always maintained close friendships with a few people who were also big Marvel people. So I would go with them to the local comic book store every Wednesday, and I would see what they were reading, and every once in a while they would tell me what's going on, or they would push me to buy something. So that's basically my Marvel knowledge. Once we get past the mid 80s, kind of runs that way. Whereas with DC, I did at least keep up with up until the last several years. So there are certain things I know. There are certain things I've heard about, and then there are things I've read about more in recent weeks. And then when I talked to you, I then did additional, I became more curious. So I would do additional research just to really find out more about certain storylines to see, okay, how much is this really mirroring this or not? Or what are they doing? The only other thing I want to say about that, and then I'll shut up for at least a minute here. And I don't want to sound like I'm being, wagging a finger at anyone, you or anybody, but I just want to say that you can go back as far as, Tim Burton's Batman through every DC, Marvel, whatever thing that's been done in the last 40 odd years. Most of the time, whatever they're doing, be it a TV show or a movie or whatever, there's going to be some basis where the director, the writers, the people behind the whatever the production is, they used different comic book storylines and source materials as either, sometimes it might be just basically inspiration, and sometimes they may be taking elements and ideas directly from the pages. They're rarely direct adaptations. In fact, I don't know if they ever really are truly direct adaptations.
I can't think of a lot of examples of that either. I mean, I'm sure there's some, you know, like maybe like, you know, episodes of some of the shows or whatever that come pretty close, but,
right.
But yeah, everything always might, always adaptation, never
so,
direct.
So I think there's like things that are at work with this series that on the face of it, one can say, well, they're not doing this because of this, this, and this. And I would say, yeah, that's true. But they're not adapting that. But they're taking this concept from that, you know, and they're combining it with, you know, this storyline from here. So I, having done all the reading on different articles over the last month or so, you know, I have now become a little bit more, not to your extent, of course, because I haven't put in the real work of reading the actual comics. I've read articles and with, you know, lots of splash pages and panels instead. Huh. You know, so I did my Cliff Notes version, if you will, you know, but you know, it's like, for example, just to get out of the way, and then we can move back into the series again. But probably the storyline that got mentioned the most over the last couple months in relation to this show was one that was called House of M, right?
Yeah, people have been saying that, yeah.
And I know when I brought that up with you, that you were fairly dismissive of it, from what I recollect.
Yeah.
And
it's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah. Right. And that made me curious, you know, because, you know, I was putting aside, like, you know, I know we joke around sometimes. And so sometimes I'm trying to figure out, is he being just, you know, sarcastically contrary to me, or is he actually being, I'm not sure. You know,
he really wants pizza to be 7 inches thick instead of one. I can't tell. He's a fucking jackass. Did he really not know what the taxi was? Yeah. He's dumb, but there's other things.
Oh, the taxi. Inside joke of inside jokes. Anyway. So I read more about that storyline, you know, to really, you know, I basically had the whole damn thing spoiled for me. So I never even have to read it because I know the whole story. Now I just read it in text form instead of comic book form. And I was thinking, okay, I see what you're saying. And I think there's some very definite reasons why it can't be a quote unquote, you know, even an approximation adaptation of that idea. Cause I just don't think there's any way they could do that or would do that much in this one series.
Oh God, no.
But I, on the other hand, I would say, no, you're right. But on the other hand, I do think there are certain things about it, and it's the basic setup of that they are taking. So that's what I'm talking about. They're just lifting, you know, this and this from that, but it's not an adaptation. What they might be doing, and we can talk about this a little bit later or not, whatever. There is an interesting theory that they're kind of doing a spin on it, but it's almost like the reverse of what happens in House of M somehow, at least to a certain extent. And I went, huh, I guess I could see that. That's not crazy. I mean, heck, I just watched, you know, an animated version of a very well-known Batman storyline. That happened, probably one of the biggest Batman events in the last 20 odd years was something called the Hush storyline, you know, which introduces this new Batman villain, and all these other Batman villains are involved in it, and people are being, you know, beaten and killed and being mind controlled, and, you know, Superman gets involved and all these other people, whatever. And then by the end of it, you know, we reveal who Hush is. I'm not sure if I should be spoiling Hush on this podcast or not. I don't know if it really matters to anybody. I'm going to assume this doesn't matter to anybody. And if it does, I apologize. Skip ahead like a minute. Otherwise, I'll continue talking. And Hush is revealed to be, you know, Bruce Wayne's childhood friend who always had this kind of seething jealousy, anger towards him. You know, Dr. Tommy Elliot, who kind of fakes his own death during the storyline. But in the animated version, nope, they just killed Tommy Elliot during it. And then Hush turns out to be the Riddler. who basically had something done to his brain. He's got this big question mark scar on his skull or something. And I was just staring at it. I was like, huh, that's kind of a big change. that's not little. That's big. That's huge. And that's supposed to be an adaptation. So you know what I'm saying? It's just an indication, like, yeah, even if you are doing it, you can just go in a totally different crazy direction and they can do that. They can get away with it. Plus, maybe, you know, it's not Game of Thrones or something. Maybe they kind of want even the comic book readers to be surprised or shocked. So that's why all the theories that are very specific to comic book storylines, I take with a grain of salt, because I think, it's probably a little bit of this and a little bit of that, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, totally.
But I do think there are major things that are at work here and that are going to happen that, even if they're not based on a specific storyline, do have a very major foundation in comic book lore. And that's why, where I'm going to be going, you know, shortly.
There's lots of stuff going on in the show that, like, you know, come from the comics, at least, or at least seem to be, and, you know, things that they've done before, if in a different way.
Right. I think it goes like a little bit above just being inspired by the comics. I think it's more like, they're taking this thing from the comics and they're just putting a little bit of a spin on it. So it's just like, it's not quite like that, but it's enough like that so that a comic book reader is like, okay, I see what they're doing. Very nice. Very nice. Get that kind of reaction. Well, they hope to get that kind of reaction. I don't know if they necessarily get it. You never know, because people, as we've pointed out, people can be dicks. So. Well,
If I'm watching it as like as somebody that has like lots of Avengers comics, I don't know how many years straight I have, but you know, I have like everything from like 69 or so to like 2015 maybe, until like the movies were popular enough where they're releasing like 10 like $4 or $5 comics every fucking month, and I just said, no, I'm not gonna fucking try to keep buying every Avengers comic of every kind anymore. Mm-hmm. But I've got a lot. And, you know, and the show is doing good. It's doing well enough for me where, like, I'm unsettled watching it while also being entertained. So I guess I'm not necessarily like a super harsh critic about stuff, but they're not doing anything that's like, you know, like you watching Gotham where you're just like, what the fuck are these idiots doing? These disrespectful fucks. I never have to think that at all.
Yeah, this is the anti-Gotham as far as I'm concerned. And again, I say it, I've said it a million times before, I'll say it a million times again. I know that Gotham is like the show that makes me a hypocrite, because I always talk about how I don't care. A TV show can do its own thing. It's not beholden. It doesn't have to adhere closely, blah, blah, blah. But I hate the conceit of Gotham so much. It doesn't make sense to me, and I hate the casting of the Bruce Wayne kid character so much. I just despise the show. Anyway, okay, we don't need to have two hateful rants and two back to back podcasts.
I don't think the show's really executed well either. So like, if it's not like a really good compelling drama, it's really hard to like overlook some of this shit and like make excuses for it. You know,
right. Okay, so let's get back to the series that we're here to talk about. This was supposed to be a quick podcast. I know you got chicken masala to be making soon. Anyway,
yeah. Well, if Lana listens to this, maybe she'll rewrite reality and make Gotham not suck for you. So I'm trying.
That would be nice, but then we'd lose that amazing podcast of it. Anyway, okay. Podcast history. So back to our overview of the season so far. I don't know how many. I know two friends of mine are probably just blanked out for the last 15 minutes. Anyway, so as we were saying, basically the first three episodes of the series set up the premise. Each one gets something a little bit more, something sinister, something creeping in, especially when we get to the third episode, which leads to Wanda expunging the woman who at the time we're told is Geraldine, and she turns out to actually be Monica Rambeau, who some of us at least last saw as a child in that Captain Marvel movie that came out, that took place, I should say, back in the mid-90s. And that led us to the next episode, which is the first one that took us outside the Westview borders. And that's where we finally got to see the results of the reversal of the Thanos snap that happened in the two-part Avengers Infinity War Endgame thing. And that's where we also met up with a couple of characters some folks would recall from other Marvel movies, because you got Agent Jamie Wu, who was from, people would remember from the Ant-Man and the Wasp movie. And then you get the science nerd Darcy Lewis, who I know you love her. She appeared in the two Thor movies.
The first two are bad. Like in my rewatch, I couldn't even make it through the second one. It was that bad. Oh, it's just bad.
But go on.
Yeah, fuck her. She sucks. She's better on this, but those.
You know, I defend Kat Dennings because people dump on her because of mostly because of the two broke girls thing. But I've always liked her. But
then again, whatever. I just don't like those movies.
So. I got you. I'm a little surprised on the Thor one, but you know, I get it. You know, I have my issues with it as well, but clearly not as much as you. I just hated everything that, you know, the whole, oh, we're going to have this big thing happen in this little town. And then that's all you do with a destroyer. But anyway, that's leading us down the garden path of geeky conversation that 90% of us won't know what you're fucking talking about. So let's get back to this. From this point on, the belief is that Wanda is behind the entire phenomena, at least as far as, you know, Monica Rambeau and the people out there are concerned. Which, among other things, that means she's been holding an entire town of people against their will, and they've been forced into this existence. And it's not really that much different. I pointed this out online and in a tweet. It started making me think this is all just like the townspeople in that classic and my personal favorite Twilight Zone episode, It's a Good Life. You know? Come on, I know you must have thought of that because, you know, you're a big Twilight Zone guy.
Oh yeah, it's totally a good comparison.
So here's where it starts getting interesting. So at this point, you know, I thought it would have been safe to say that Wanda is at least partially, if not completely, responsible for what is happening at that point. It's also fair to say that there are other forces at work here, and things might not be what they have appeared to be. And while we see some, I guess you can call them glitches in the mainframe, you know, like when Wanda herself seems to rewrite the script when anyone starts to go off page, so to speak, which happens certainly with Vision or these awkward moments with Agnes and others. The biggest fly in the ointment that seems to really throw Wanda for a loop is what happens at the end of the fifth episode when her brother Pietro Maximoff, aka the hero Quicksilver, shows up on her doorstep. And that was kind of like the big sonic boom, you know, that happened in the show so far. You know, I wouldn't say it got quite the end of Mandalorian kind of reaction, but it's kind of like in that ballpark as far as people going, what? Because, you know, what was strange and unsettling to Wanda, not to mention us watching, it's not just the fact that Pietro is dead. It's that the actor playing Pietro, it's not Aaron Taylor Johnson, who played Pietro and died in Avengers Age of Ultron. Well, there's another winner of a Marvel movie. It's Evan Peters, who played the role of Pietro in, I believe, three different X-Men movies. And these are movies that were put out by Fox well before there was any deal between Disney and Fox. So it's actually part of a totally different Marvel movie universe and not part of the MCU. Until now. Or is it? Because then we got to episode 6, you know, the spooktacular episode. And now I guess we have to revise the theory and perspective at least just a little bit here. So let's focus on that, you know. You know, I know I kind of want to talk about the kids, but I feel maybe we should just go right to Pietro first, because I think that's kind of the bigger thing right now. Although I do think the kids are very significant. I'm not dismissing them at all. So I've got some thoughts on it, but what, now that you've seen the latest episode, which might have changed what you might have thought at the end of the fifth episode, where do you think they're going here? What do you think's at play here?
Well, like, I've got like all sorts of other like theories about what's going on, mm-hmm. like exactly. So kind of like, you know, so if you want, I can discuss that, and then that would probably inform what I think is going to happen more. But it depends on if you're worried, like I might spoil you on something, like, cause I think I might know what's going on in certain ways, or if you're not worried about that kind of thing.
Now you have me intrigued. I don't know. I got the stuff I was going to say, but obviously yours might be more grounded on background information, where mine is just random theorizing and speculation here. Why don't you just go for it? Listeners, be aware that, you know, Dan is talking from a place of, you know, informative background. So, if it's a spoiler, it's not that you read the script. It's just you're guessing at where they might be going. It's not a direct adaptation. So right. I wouldn't be that concerned about it. Because, hey, look, I'm the guy who a month or two ahead of time guessed online that Lost was going to do a flash forward, and then everyone thought that somehow I found out ahead of time. It's like, how would I have found out ahead of time? Some schmuck in Brooklyn found out where Lost was going, but no one else online. How is that possible?
Yes.
Anyway,
that's not
good. So back to your theorizing on Pietro.
Okay. Oh, I thought I was just, we were just, okay. Well, I thought we were just theorizing. I just was going to theorize, but like everything in general.
I'm not
sure what they're going to do with Pietro, because like in these storylines where like the Scarlet Witch loses control, he's kind of like the bad guy of the situation. So like in the House of M that people keep referring to, where she completely rewrites like all of reality instead of just like making like a, you know, Twilight Zone freaky town. Like he's the one that like gets her to do that. You know, he's like the, you know, the devil on her shoulder, like manipulating her. Mm-hmm. So as to whether or not he's doing that in this, I guess, you know, that wouldn't make much sense, just because like, you know, this Quicksilver isn't really like, you know, had any contact with her before.
Yeah. With Pietro, here's how I'm trying to look at it. I still think this is their way of opening the door to the quote unquote multiverse. You know, yes, right. He's clearly not just Pietro transported over from the Fox X-Men universe either. But I don't know, there may just be more or perhaps less to him than some folks are speculating, I think. I think, for example, many are now pointing out that he has memories of Pietro's life and death that occurred in the MCU, not his own life in universe. So
yeah, that's what I'm guessing. Because it sounds, you know, like the last X-Men, couple X-Men movies sounded pretty fucking terrible, so I didn't bother watching them. So, like, it definitely seemed like he was referring to, like, what happened in, like, these movies.
Yeah, he's not talking about the X-Men movies. And then people are using that, and they're saying, how can that be, unless he's really not from another universe? And, you know, I would posit, however, that, yeah, sure, that's possible. But it could also be that the fact that he's now in an alternate universe has actually changed his memories. And that process might have even been accelerated just by the simple fact of him being inside this hex that's enclosed this town of Westview. Now, I'll give you all an example of something else. It's comic book related, but it's a tried and true thing. And it's got nothing to do with the MCU or even Marvel, because, you know, I'm a DC guy. But it does involve a speedster, albeit a much faster and better one. But it's something to think about with what they're doing here. And I'm talking about The Flash. Just give me like 1 minute. I think I can get it out in 1 minute. I'll just go to a more recent one. There's a very well-known major event that happens with The Flash, happened several years back. So much they used it as a basis for an animated film, and they even adapted it really badly for the TV series, and it may perhaps be largely the basis for the upcoming Flash movie. And it's called Flashpoint, or the Flashpoint Paradox. You know, I'm not going to get into all the specifics of that, you know, without spoilers. The past has changed, cataclysmic impact on the present, and the Flash is at the center of it all. Now, when everything has changed, he initially has memories of the life that was, but as he moves forward, his memories are being rewritten and altering. So now he has memories of the current timeline, and he's losing the memories of his previous timeline. This is a concept that's been done several times in DC, and as I looked into it, it's also been done several times with Marvel as well. It could be very well be what's going on here. Thus, yes, it can actually be the Pietro from this, from the multiverse, from this, from the Fox X-Men universe, but his memories are actually being rewritten to reflect the Aaron Taylor Johnson version of the character. Now that's the big one. That's one way to go about it. But then there's, you know, that's just one possible theory, because there's a lot of other ones, there's probably more popular ones or even more likely ones, but that's the way I'm looking at it. Obviously, but it kind of goes hand in hand with where I'm starting to go myself. The overriding theory that Pietro actually isn't Pietro at all, but he's actually a major Marvel villain, you know, disguised as Pietro. And that creepy shark in the Yo Magic TV spot isn't even a direct hint of his actual evil nature. I know you've heard this, and you've probably have talked or thought about it yourself, Dan. So, and I'm sure that you're probably 1,000 times more familiar with the main. They've mentioned a few villains, but they're real. It seems to be most people are putting their money on one more than the other two that I've heard mentioned. And that one is Mephisto. That's one. Is that where now? Do you think that's where they're going with this? Because there seems to be a really strong contention for that one.
Well, I mean, like, Mephisto is tied to, like, the, like, you know, like, her creating, like, the babies in the first place. It's like, in comics, she, like, you know, can't have kids. And, of course, like, you know, Vision isn't really, like, you know, popping the old,
No robotic baby batter?
Yes, that works out good. So Mephisto's definitely, like, part of that in the comics, but hasn't been previously introduced in any of this stuff so far. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if they're going to do that or not. I do kind of like, you know, like, it does seem to have, you know, I mean, it's possible, but as to whether they would like introduce somebody like that without, like, in this manner seems a little, you know, like, you, that seems like the kind of character that you should like see in Doctor Strange first, and then he would like come like fuck with people like this, you know?
Well, I mean, honestly, but, if they were going to go as far as introduce the concept of the actual Marvel multiverse in a TV show, at this point, I don't think any character is out of bounds for them to introduce here, you know, especially considering the rumors about certain other characters who may or may not appear, which remains to be seen. I get what you're saying, but
he's like literally like the devil, basically. So, I mean,
oh yeah, but absolutely, he's essentially the devil, but you can't turn away from the fact that it can't be a coincidence when you have Pietro saying lines like "unleash hell, demon spawn," or "this town is charming as hell," and they kept kind of hitting that hard. Now, whether they're throwing red herrings at us or not, just to shake loose the comic geeks or not, I don't know. But there seems to be a lot going on, and the fact that she's going to be a major part, in fact, of that upcoming Doctor Strange movie, which is, you know, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. It seems like this is kind of could very well be a launching point to get there. So that's why I think it may be more and more. We might not get a full blown reveal of that character, who apparently I mispronounced. I thought it was Mephisto. It looks like Mephisto. I didn't know. Mephisto? Is it really Mephisto? I don't know. You would know better than I would, because, you know, I screw up all the pronunciations. But it could very well be it's revealed that it's him, but maybe we don't actually quote unquote see him until, you know, so and so movie. Although with the amount of money they're spending on this series, which is unprecedented. Have you seen the budget for this show?
No.
$25 million an episode.
Whoa.
To put that in perspective, that is, I mean, I think even though it might have gone up over time, I remember at one point hearing that Game of Thrones was like $9 million an episode. I think I remember that. I could be wrong. I apologize if I am. But I know I read this blows away the previous record, and I can't remember what the other show was, which was a very brief show that was like something like 21 million or something. 25 million and 7 minutes of those of a half an hour show. It's not even a half an hour because you got 7 minutes of credits. Anyway.
Yeah. No, like, yeah, but yeah, Pietro being, you know, Mephisto. I'd say it's, you know, it's a good theory, and they're definitely using stuff from that comic storyline. I mean, like in the comics, like the baby is kind of like, when she like, you know, summons or, you know, kind of creates them out of like energy, which is like, you know, dark energy or whatever. Like they're basically forced to go away, or their memories wiped by like a Fantastic Four character, like the witch Agatha Harkness. So like, I think there's a chance that this Agnes person that seems to be somewhat prominent might be the stand-in for that character, since the name Agnes isn't typical and she's, you know, seems to have a role and is close to that. So I think so they might be doing something like that.
I was absolutely going to be going to Agnes shortly. And I'll finish it up here. Then I'll get back to my continuing my Pietro spiel here. I was going to ask you about that because I've heard about the Agatha Harkness thing. I think there's been something up with Agnes from day one, and they keep dropping bigger and bigger hints. And then when you get to the latest episode, when she's literally dressed as a witch. I think I'm going to say it's not much of a limb to go out on. That's who she is. And then the question becomes for the non-Marvel conquerors like myself is just to understand the significance of who Agatha Harkness is, even though they might, again, it might be somewhat changed or altered to fit what they're doing here in the MCU. But generally, she's still going to, I would assume she's still going to play some similar kind of role type of character that she did in the comics. So right. What was her connection to Wanda, or was it more the Fantastic Four? I can't remember.
Thought like the Scarlet Witch's powers were like magic based at the time. So like she was just like, you know, like one of the magic, you know, I guess a good guy characters, you know, kind of like Doctor Strange and stuff, and just kind of like had a connection through that. I can't remember exactly like, you know, just how they got involved because it's been a while, but she ended up being, you know, part of that. So she kind of like made them go away and change stuff. But then Doctor Strange like didn't know any of it happened and like lost his freaking shit when he realized what had happened. Cause like, but by then it was too late.
Okay, I see. All right. So basically she's more of a positive mystical character, and the forces at work here kind of really obviously transcend whatever ability she has, since she is trapped like everybody else in this town. Again, assuming that's who she is, and if it's not, they're actually spending way too much time trying to make us think that.
And 90, I'm not sure what percent of the people that have watched the Marvel movies even know the character exists, but it isn't in a high percentage. So, you know, I suspect that's what they're doing. And then they'll have to have some, you know, so at some point, you know, she probably, you know, I'm not sure if they're going to have Cumberbatch on the show or not, even though it would make sense because he's kind of like the character to resolve some of this fuckery. But, you know, but maybe they'll have like Wong like show up as somebody that knows her or something, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I could see that. It wouldn't shock me at this point, if Cumberbatch was to show up, especially since, again, she's going to be in that upcoming movie in a couple years.
Yeah.
We'll see. There's a bunch of possibilities of people who might show up, but he's one of the more logical ones. And actually, Wong would, from a cost perspective, that would actually make just as much sense, because I'm going to say they could pay Benedict Wong a lot less. But then again, you know, all the Marvel actors seem to be willing to do whatever because they're part of these billion-dollar productions, whatever.
Yeah.
Let me dovetail, because I wanted to finish up what I was saying. I was writing, I hadn't gotten to the heart of my fucking Pietro thing here, but my theory. No, not your fault. Well, people want to hear you. Shut up. But here's the thing with that. Because we were talking about, A, he's He's Pietro from this other universe, but I was talking about the memories being rewritten, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Maybe he's been impacted or affected by the actual hex around the thing, but that's that. And then there's B, there's the idea that it's this other villain who has taken his form, although one wonders why he would take that form, whatever, such as a Mephisto or Mephisto. Well, you say Mephisto, I say Mephisto. Let's call the whole thing off, whatever. I actually think it's perfectly reasonable that it can actually be a blend of those two things.
Yeah.
Here's why. No matter what, they deliberately chose to have Evan Peters play this part. So whether he's the actual Pietro from the other universe, or Mephisto is aware of that universe and decides to model himself after a different Quicksilver for some reason, still opens the door to that multiverse. But then the question is, why would you model yourself after this alternate Quicksilver? And that's where that version of a theory kind of loses a bit of viability. But I was thinking, you know, isn't it possible that, you know, Mephisto, whatever. It's really bothering me I'm not sure about the pronunciation now. I'm obsessing on it now. Isn't it possible that even though he's the devil incarnate himself, pretty much, that he cannot raise the dead, which is something that we've heard a bunch of times on this very series. They keep talking about that, even though we keep seeing people who are supposed to be dead alive, like Vision and now like Pietro. But there's a reason they keep bringing that up. But he can't raise the dead, but with his otherworldly knowledge of other realms and universes, since he can't bring back the MCU Pietro, he instead plucks Pietro out of that other universe, and he's playing puppeteer here. So Pietro's memories are indeed being rewritten, like the way I said, but much like everyone else in Westview, who seems to be under Wanda's power, he might actually be under Mephisto's power. Yeah. That I think kind of works for me as far as theory wise on Pietro. Of course, you know, we'll in 48 hours we'll find that it's not like that at all. But that's kind of where I'm going with the theory on Pietro for now.
Yeah. And Google Translate pronounces it as Mephisto, so you could be right. I mean, I just, you know, grew up reading the comics, and that's just how it stuck. I don't know if I've ever seen the character in anything. If he was in a Fantastic Four movie or something, he definitely I definitely didn't watch that movie. So.
I was about to say, but with all the animated output they've done over the years, he must have appeared somewhere. But then
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah, but since those ones back in the 90s and stuff.
Right, but then again, with a couple exceptions, as I've been told, Marvel animated stuff. I heard the X-Men stuff in the 90s is very good. I've heard that's good. Yeah. And the one that came out later, it's very good. But
no, we like stealing the music for our Legion podcast.
I know. Shh. That's the one thing YouTube never caught on and dinged us for was that, which is amazing. Every other piece of music we ever used, we got dinged on. So if we ever monetized our podcast, well, we're not getting that money. But that's like the one thing we use that they didn't recognize. Of course, if they're listening to this podcast, oh well. Anyway, so. So you can just throw out something silly like, hey, Mephisto might not be actually, you know, in the form of Pietro, but who knows? Maybe he's the unseen Ralph that we keep hearing Agnes refer to. Cause yeah. they both have a PH in their name. Just saying. isn't that like a really great way to build a theory? They both share two letters in the same name. Anyway, all right. So let's we covered. I guess you did talk about the kids.
I can. Do you want to talk about them or like what happens to them in the comics or?
Well, they've gone from what seemed like just a plot device or pieces to, okay, they are actually playing, look like they're going to continue to play a significant part in this series. I'm wondering if what you were talking about before, I mean, this is really basic stuff, so it's nothing, ooh, wow, so smart, not really. I wonder if the fact that up until she's surprisingly pregnant, the fact that we never see any children in the town, although they keep mentioning children, like in that second episode where they keep chanting, for the children, which is beautifully creepy. I really love that, actually. Yeah. I wonder if all that was just a reflection of the fact of what you were saying, that up until this bizarro pregnancy, she's never been able to have kids because, you know, Vision, you know, can't really do anything about that. And is that simply the reason why we never saw kids in the town, even though we don't see any kids in the town until this Halloween episode? This is the first time I think we see any other kids, if I'm not mistaken, in the entire town.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah,
So, I mean, I know that the two kids, and then we see it in this episode, that they end up with similar powers to, like, Wanda and Pietro, essentially, right?
Yeah, and they do in the comics as well. They're, you know, they're never, like, bad guy characters. Like, once they, like, they're brought back into reality during, like, House of M or whatever, like, eventually they end up becoming, like, you know, part of, like, a young Avengers superhero team with, like, Scott Lang's daughter and, like, a variety of other characters, so...
So they became characters that continued to exist. They didn't just disappear or something.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's interesting. They're still around. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And I know. I think they gave them code names. Like, is it Wiccan and Speed? Can Speed at least outrun his uncle Pietro? Since Pietro is really kind of like the slowest speedster I've ever seen. No, I'm just kidding. I kid because, you know, whatever. Anyway. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Vision here. I remember being a little confused about this. I say I remember like it was years ago when it was days ago. I remember all the way back to last week when I was really confused about this, because I know the whole idea is that, hey, Vision's dead and how he got brought back to life. And we see the clip. The footage that she stole the body from, I guess, S.W.O.R.D. headquarters or something, whatever.
Yeah, Project Pegasus, I think, is where it was at.
Right. So, now, the whole thing with the fact that he's an artificial life form to begin with always gives me pause. But I understand it's all about the Mind Stone, the Infinity Gem that Thanos had, you know, ripped out of his head. And that was really... kind of what gave him not just life, but it gave him his soul, so to speak, you know. So once that was ripped out, he dies. And I will say I was confused because I didn't realize, because I didn't rewatch anything recently, obviously. I didn't realize that the Mind Stone is subsequently destroyed. I thought all the Infinity Gems were fine. I didn't realize that that was the one that got destroyed. So that's why they were unable to replace it in Vision. Do I have that right?
I guess I just watched it, but I don't remember where they went back and got the Mind Stone from.
See, I think because I was looking at, because this was really bothering me, because I kept hearing about, you know, everyone got brought, you know, other than, you know, people who got their necks broken, whatever, but anyone who got, you know, everyone else came back from the dead, you know, or back after the blip or the snap or whatever, but Vision obviously didn't. And I got confused by that initially because I was like, wait a minute. At the end of Avengers Endgame, there's a big thing. There's a big point made about Captain America is now about to zip through time and go back and replace all the Infinity Gems where they should be, which then makes me wonder about him going and finally seeing the Red Skull. But that's a comp talk for another podcast entirely. Because don't get me started.
But he wouldn't bring it back to the Vision. Like they would bring it back to like wherever they got it from, like back in like 2014 or whatever. So they still wouldn't be able to use it to help the Vision, because if they didn't bring all the gems back to the right place in the time they took it, then it would like create, you know, branched realities. They have to like bring the green one back to like the ancient one, so that way she can still give it to Doctor Strange and for, you know, so on and so forth.
Oh, it's interesting because you have that concern of a branch reality, yet one of the major things that happens in that movie that creates an alternate timeline reality, whatever, is what ends up happening with Loki, which is why we're going to have a Loki TV show and he's alive, because the Loki in the past kind of was able to zap out of there. So he's not the Loki that dies, you know, in, I guess it was in Infinity War. Okay. Oh, no. Like I said, I was confused by it. But now I'm kind of okay with it. So I was moving on with it, but I was trying to figure out, you know, I'm trying to find my notes now where what the heck I was talking about here. I just totally lost my chain of thought with that for some reason. Oh, I was kind of, you know, I'm trying to put aside certain things that bothered me because yeah. I'm sorry. If Wanda stole Vision's body from Sword headquarters, I'm a little confused why that theft didn't set off a much bigger alarms everywhere.
Yeah, what I'm thinking is, and this is digging into the comics, but in episode 2 of this series, like a Sword agent like gets into the town briefly and like comes out through the sewers, and then like she just like sends him out, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But when he like ends up in the town, he has like beekeeper outfit on, and there's like bees buzzing around him. Right. So in Marvel Comics, like there's like a bad guy organization, the scientists called AIM, Advanced Idea Mechanics, who were used in Iron Man 3, but not really used in Iron Man 3. They're just kind of like, you know, like the bad guy in that movie was like the head of them, but they didn't really do anything at all. So since their traditional comic attire is like they're just wearing fucking beekeeper costumes for some reason, it makes me suspect, and based on like the way that the various, you know, like the head of them is starting to act, I suspect that maybe they're like actually not a good guy organization, it's just AIM in disguise, even though they've already kind of like had, you know, Hydra infiltrate SHIELD, so they've kind of like, you know, played that card a little bit. Just from that would explain why, like, you know, if she actually took the body, why nobody knows about it, or if like it was fake, if it was like a doctored footage, why, you know, it doesn't add up then too, because they're not actually good guys at all. And that's why you have like, you know, Jimmy Woo, FBI agent, as like somebody that can be a good guy that isn't associated with them, for example. Right. So if they're bad guys, and you've got him and the, you know, character from Thor and Monica Rambeau.
That makes a lot of sense because, I mean, clearly with each successive episode, the guy who's kind of a douche who's in charge of them is taking on more and more villainous qualities, and they're not really doing much to hide it either. So there does seem to, I would say there's a good basis for possibility there. That would make a lot of sense to me. Interesting.
And it's just based on seeing one of them in a beekeeper outfit, helmet, which is, you know, kind of a strange thing to have crawling out of the sewers without meaning.
I got confused. I thought I was watching Doom Patrol for a second there, and it was, oh, you haven't seen that yet, so never mind. Okay. Well, people who watch Doom Patrol or read certain comics, she actually, at one point, Elastigirl imagines herself to be a superhero who's called the Beekeeper, and she wears a beekeeper's outfit. So, and this goes back to, you know, many, many years. So, anyway, back to this. So, but then I was starting to think about it as far as the Vision and stuff with, you know, and I started going, well, you know, if Pietro is plucked from another universe, then I started wondering, well, why couldn't a Mind Stone also have been plucked from another universe? And I was curious about that. So I that was one of the things I started doing, like, research on. I started looking up stuff about the Infinity Gems and Marvel, whatever. And was reading, like, oh, they do establish that in Marvel Comics, that, you know, not only that there's a multiverse, but there's a set of Infinity Gems in every multiverse.
Yes.
However, the catch is that the Infinity Gems are not supposed to be able to really function outside of their specific universes.
Yeah.
But...
But since the Vision's stuck in this, like, you know, what it's maybe like a pocket dimension, then I guess that would explain some of it.
There you go. That's exactly where I was going with that. Because just little, well, that's actually a better phrase than I had. Thank you. But, and that would be why once he actually tries to step outside of it, he starts to decay and fall apart. He can only exist in this one within the hex, I guess. I love that they're calling it a hex. They're very cute. They're very cute. So then I kind of took it further. And this is now I started to build out my theory. My theory is that Wanda did that. That's what she actually does to help bring back Vision. That made sense. But her doing that, her breaking the plane, so to speak, of the multi or whatever, it's these actions that put her on Mephisto's radar. And in kind of a bit of devilish cruelty, as I believe he's known for, he decides to go pluck something else from that universe that she's plundered, which turns out to be another version of her brother. So he seems like someone who I'll use your word, you know, your curse word, would enjoy fucking with people like that. I kind of like that idea. Because it shows that she bears a lot of the responsibility for what's happening, but now I think things have gone beyond her control and there are other forces at work that have kind of piled on what she's done, which has obviously compounded the situation, I think. That's kind of the way I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. And I think there's even a chance that, like, you know, Zemo, the bad guy from Captain America Civil War, could be involved in the situation too. I mean, one, like, as a way to kind of like set him up more for like the Falcon and Winter Soldier series, he seems to be like the bad guy of, but two, because like he's like a Sokovian intelligence officer whose like family gets killed when that Ultron shit's going down, so he has a connection to Wanda, of course, because of that crap. So the fact that he's one of the main Avengers villains, you know, he could also be part of this stuff too. Maybe not.
I don't know. I wonder if they would. It'll be interesting to see if there really is any connection between this series and that series or not. Because I could see that having certain threads flow from one to the other. Although obviously you're dealing with very non mystical superpowered type characters in that show compared to, you know, Wanda at least. But it would make sense because these are all part of this, you know, phase four, and we know that, you know, Marvel likes their connecting pieces, that they all should at least to some extent build upon one another. I don't know if they would just skip that series entirely and then go on into the movies. Because I think we're going to have a couple Marvel TV shows before we even get to any of the movies. And the one movie that's coming out, that's supposed to come out at some point this year, first, is going to be a Black Widow movie, which takes place in the past anyway, so I don't really know if or how that would have any connection to any of this, or that's just going to be an outlier, you know, kind of be like the Rogue One of this universe, so to speak. But because you got Falcon and the Snowman coming, I guess, in mid to late March, I think it's coming out. And if I'm not mistaken, I think the Loki show comes out in May. So I think each one is like following the next. So
And Mephisto is the kind of character that I could see existing in the Loki show too, since they're both kind of like, you know, manipulative kind of bastards. So I could see, you know, they could be, you know, tying all this stuff together in an interesting way.
Yeah, I definitely could see that. That would make more sense to me than the Falcon and I keep wanting to say the Falcon and the Snowman. I keep telling me to say the title of that show, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier thing. But you do have the Baron Zemo character who's going to be there, who is going to be like a major villain character on that show. So there is a possibility of that connection. So that's actually a good thought there, I think. Speaking, just as we start to get towards the end of these things here, I didn't really have any thoughts about how Vision is able to seemingly jumpstart and then reverse or lock up people's memories in Westview. I've seen that as a question out there. I don't know. I'm going with the idea that he still has some form. He's got that alternate version of the Mind Stone that does work within the Hex, and that's what he has the ability to just basically due to that. I can't think of any other reason for it.
Yeah, the Mind Stone is the only thing that really makes sense with that. So.
Yeah, because otherwise it's like, well, he ain't magic, you know. And the last little bit before, really, we haven't touched on Monica Rambeau much.
Yeah.
And we know about that she obviously is playing a major part here, and obviously there's a lot to her story or backstory that exists in the comics as far as who she is, what she becomes, some stuff I think would have been her, but they made it her mother, or they reversed that. I'm not really, I get a little foggy on that, whatever. So they're basically implying that by her passing through the barrier a couple times now, that has changed her DNA. Right?
Yeah. Right.
And So and one would presume they're laying the groundwork for her to have abilities, because in the comics she become. I think she has a few different names or a few different characters. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. She starts out as Captain Marvel, like after the alien Captain Marvel, mm-hmm. which is like, you know, and long before Carol Danvers. She was a Avenger and stuff. So.
Right.
And then after that, like, eventually she became like a character known as Photon, which I suspect they'll use since they've already got Captain Marvel, in use now.
Right. I think they're gonna have like two Captain Marvels pretty surely, if I'm not mistaken.
And even though it'd be funny if they had like, because they already like destroyed the incel community by having a female Captain Marvel. So if they had another female Captain Marvel that was also black, man, those fuckers would be like, they'd just die.
Well, isn't there another one that they're doing that's, I think she's of Indian heritage, if I'm not mistaken, I think. I might be wrong about that. I think it's...
Yeah, there is not, too.
Is she Miss Marvel? Am I getting Miss Marvel and Captain Marvel confused? I apologize. We don't have any characters named, Mr. DC, anyway. Whatever. we had one named Captain Marvel, but now he's not allowed to be called Captain Marvel.
So, yeah, Monica Rambeau was an Avenger for like ever, so they would, as soon as she appeared in Captain Marvel, the movie, as a child, it was, it was obvious at some point they'd use that character.
So here's the question, because this happened because, her DNA got altered by going through that barrier. Now, do you think they're implying that could happen to anyone who passes through that barrier, or is it only specific to her? There were some theories out there, which I think we should just shoot down right off the bat, because they don't make any sense. Ooh, this is the first step towards mutants in the MCU. It's like, no, they weren't born that way, so therefore they can't be mutants. That's exactly not what a mutant is. What they call like a mutate. Which, guess what? That's the case with practically every other superhero you've ever heard of. They get turned, they're normal, and they get turned into a superhero by some, other force, whether it be a radioactive spider or a cosmic ray or whatever. But I'm curious, is it just something that's specifically going to happen to her, or is it going to happen to everyone who goes through that barrier a couple times? Because like Darcy, for example, didn't that thing just get her? And eventually she's going to have to come out of there. So doesn't that mean that her DNA might get changed? Or is Rambo just special? I don't know.
Yeah, and then she'll get electricity powers, because when I just watched Thor 1, I got really mad because like she's like an astrophysics intern, and for some reason she has a full powered taser and like zaps Thor with it at the beginning of the movie. I'm just like, what the fuck's going on? Why do they have a taser? And they're like, science man. So maybe she'll get electric powers, because like how stupid that was.
Well, it's because she was hanging out with a Skarsgård, and those guys tend to get a little handsy, so that's why she would have
a taser. Yeah, he was handsy in the original version of Insomnia, so yes, definitely.
So, which basically takes us to the final thing, the last little thing, and then we can wrap this up. Because it's out there, it's zooming around on the social medias, the tweets and whatnots, about who this Aerosmith? Wow, that would be amazing. Steven Tyler, what are you doing
here? Whose daughter? Whose daughter was in the second one of these movies, Incredible Hulk, which,
The less said about that, the better. So this aerospace engineer, friend of hers, that she's supposed to be going to for help, rumors are it's going to be somebody kind of major. And we know what the hot, and I know what the hot rumor is. And it'll be interesting it'll be interesting if any of these things come true, because they're doing a nice job of keeping a lid on things. I mean, no one had heard about Evan Peters showing up as Quicksilver until it happened. Kudos to them. And that wasn't even among the rumors of things people thought. At least I had not seen it. I saw a lot of other things, and I even added to them. Like I kept thinking James Spader is going to show up at the door, because that would be hysterical or something like that. Some people were like, oh, Thanos is James Brolin's going to show up, and there's going to be like a reference to Thanos or something. So the biggest rumor, obviously, is it's going to be Reed Richards. My instinct is to dismiss that, because I was like, they're not going to introduce Reed Richards on the show. They wouldn't do that. But you know, I can't say they wouldn't for sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
I can't be sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I wouldn't think that it would make any sense. He just doesn't have anything to do with any of this stuff, you know. Like if this reality was like in like the negative zone or something that like Reed Richards was like, you know, part of whatever, then like I guess that'd be possible. But you know, this definitely isn't like an antimatter universe that they're hanging out in.
Right, but they've been dropping little hints and cute little winks about the Fantastic Four in this series already by a lot of people's estimations. When they've been talking about these astronauts and they've made references to even the radiation that Darcy is talking about herself, kind of sort of really kind of sounds like cosmic rays. That's kind of what we're talking about here. When I heard it for the first time, I said, oh, they're being really cute because they're dressing it up and kind of almost trying to disguise it by making this acronym and all the other. It's like, yeah, but that's what you're talking about. That sounds like what you're talking about. And, you know, and we know they are building up to that. I mean, quite frankly, I would predict we're in phase four of the MCU. I'm pretty sure the phase four is going to end with the Fantastic Four, because how could they resist doing that? They got to do that. But, my skepticism is more, would you really introduce Reed Richards here? But you know, if John Krasinski shows up, I'll be like, okay. Again, I'm still going with the John Krasinski as Reed Richards idea, because so much I care about that much about him, although I'm fine with him. I just want Emily Blunt to see Richards so bad. I'll take him along for the ride. Then I've heard other people going, hey, maybe they'll go really off kilter and make it Victor Von Doom. And I was like, I think that's ridiculous.
That's more likely because he is like connected to the dark magic and stuff like that. But introducing Doom without introducing any of the rest of them is, I mean, I guess it would be okay, but not maybe the way I would do it.
I think what they should do, if they were, I'll tell you something, if they were to be as audacious and shocking as to have it be Reed Richards, who is a name and a character most people know who it is, I say they have it that he's already established that he has, that what happened to those four people has already happened. And he's already has his elastic abilities. And that's the kind of thing that we hint at it with something like that, which means when we finally get to that movie, we are spared another retelling of the Fantastic Four story, although it has not been done well yet. That's okay. You can skip it. You can, or give it to us in the opening credits. We can just make like you did with Spider-Man. Just go right to it.
Yeah. That's what they did with Spider-Man, and it worked fine. There was no issues whatsoever. I mean,
yeah. Even though they're bad movies, we all know. I'm sorry. Pretty much everyone knows, and you can just, again, shorthand it in the credits. We got it. Got it. We don't need. It's like this upcoming Batman movie. I swear to God, if we're going to have to sit through Bruce Wayne's parents dying again, I'm going to, I have to go look up the IMDb thing. I want to see if his parents are listed in the credits, because I'm going to get really angry about it. I'm like, really? 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 Does everyone have to do this? Anyway. Okay. Is there anything else that we want to touch on before we wrap this up?
No, I think we've about covered everything.
All right, so I would say we're definitely looking forward to the next episode. My thinking is, you know, I don't know if we'll get the full story about Pietro just yet, but I certainly think we'll find out more. I've heard these final three episodes are actually going to be more an hour in length, so that's very intriguing. And then, again, minus the 7 to 8 minutes worth of credits at the end, I make the joke, but we all know, all of us are idiots, and we stand there thinking there's going to be, oh, it's a Marvel thing, we'll get a little thing at the end, and we don't. But it's like a movie, so they have like movie style credits that go on forever. Is there any other kind of, at least for the next episode, any kind of speculation or anything you think that where they might go with it in the next one comes to mind?
Yeah. No, not really. I'm just wondering like what kind of like, you know, sitcom like things they'll use if they keep doing that. If they'll have like, you know, something like Parks and Rec or The Office for one of them or eventually or, you know.
I think, you know, it's interesting because obviously what they've been doing, especially as they've gotten further and further, they've gone from it's interesting that they went from a show that's they did have a kid eventually. I forgot about that. Nope. Okay. Forget what I was about to say. I was about to say something about the Dick Van Dyke Show. I just remembered. That's not true. They did have a kid on that show eventually.
Yeah, like right away. So,
but more to what, to stick what I wanted to say in the first place, which is what I should have stuck with in the first place, is they are trying to adhere to comedies or sitcoms that are more family oriented because of the whole family unit issue with the kids and whatever. So I don't know if they would really go to any kind of workplace comedy kind of a thing, like a Parks and Rec or an Office. I'm not saying they won't. I just mean
the way they shoot it, you know, like, you know, I suppose, I guess, Modern kind of did that too, but I'm just like the style of whatever.
Right. And Modern Family might be more likely. I could see that being likely. The mockumentary style. I would say, I think that I could definitely see them doing a mockumentary style kind of thing. And, you know, obviously you think The Office first and best when it comes to that. Well, the British one at least, but they would probably do it more as Modern Family because it is, you know, that I could see. That would make more sense. Because there is some odd, even though it's not just, you know, the look and the theme songs, whatever, there's always some odd, creepy kind of parallel with whatever the show they're using as the foundation for the sitcom and what they actually do. Some creepier than others, I guess. It's interesting that they had to just skip the 90s and people were saying, oh, it's because there were no real family oriented comedies in the 90s. Like, yes, there were plenty of family comedies. What are you talking about? Home Improvement is the 90s. All those TGIF crappy shows were on the 90s. Roseanne was still on. It wasn't on the 90s. Don't tell me there was no.
I just wanted to use Frasier, but you know.
Yes, I know. Well, we can at least we can have a 1934 version of it.
but they already killed Eddie a couple episodes ago. So.
All right. Anyway, if you enjoyed this podcast. Then you will enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Like the page and join the conversation about shows like WandaVision and so many others. You can find us on Apple Podcasts where you can rate and review us, but obviously you should really just subscribe to our feed there. But if you want to check out our entire archive of podcasts, which now number 300 and, well, as of now, it's 301 podcasts, go to stvdpodcast.podbean.com. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. STV, of course, as in Serious TV Drama. So, next up on the STVD agenda, at the end of next week, there will be the next greatest TV drama episodes of all time coming out. I believe we're up to number 7 on that countdown. It'll be an episode of Buffy, the episode Hush, and Court Robinson will be co-hosting with me for that. I have not spoken with Mr. Dan here as to whether or not we will do additional podcasts about WandaVision. I think we might.
Normally with this kind of show when we like jump in mid-season, it just depends on like how much is going on in the episode, but we tend to end up just doing it, you know, doing one for, you know, each episode if warranted. So,
yeah. You know. I kind of feel we might do that, and that might work well nicely scheduling wise. Because if we can figure out our own respective schedules and get it done pretty early on, like sometime between Friday and Monday or something like that, just get it out there. Because I usually release and record the other one later in the week, so just. So much to do for something we don't get paid for. Anyway, I really enjoyed getting the chance to do this. Dan, I'm glad you were up for the challenge, and I hope everybody out there enjoyed it as well. So thank you to you. So I'll say goodnight to everybody, and Dan, you can – oh, I'll let Dan have the last word.
Oh, I don't have anything to say, so goodnight, people.